Welcome to Syncifying Syncify. On the show, we find the best content on building your startup. We then sync up and explain our biggest lessons to you, the listener, and try to apply those learnings to our own startup, Syncify. We look at what we can do as a young startup, building the future of social audio, and give some insights into what really happens as you build an idea into an actual business. I'm Sam Harris, your host and the CEO of Syncify. This season, we are syncing up over the Y Combinator Startup School series of lectures, which are a really good resource for anyone trying to build a business or launch something. You can also join the Y Combinator Startup School for free yourself online if you're interested and enjoy the content. I'm delighted to be joined the entire season by my co-host Jack Hughes, who is both my best friend and business partner here at Syncify. Hello and welcome to the first episode where we syncify ourselves.
Syncify!
Exactly, just like that. So basically we're going to listen to great content about how to run a business and become successful, and we're going to break it down for you, and then we're going to apply it to ourselves and what we're doing and just speak about the things that we're learning. And so we're just doing all these things at the same time and actually becoming in sync on like the things we're trying to solve. We're starting with the Startup School by Y Combinator, who do an amazing series of how to run a startup and all the things that you need to know. And so their first episode that we're talking about today is how to evaluate a startup idea, because you need to know the best things to be looking for and what are the things that are going to make your startup stand out and become a success and raise investment, all these kind of things. And so the first things they talk about are the signs of a good pitch and how do you know that you're probably solving a problem, which is the point of any business, is you have to solve problems. And they really identify six key problem areas that you need to be looking at. The first one is it a popular problem? Do a lot of people have it? And you need to have a problem that is relevant to a lot of people, essentially, because if only a few people have it, it's a bit harder to grow. Then the second problem area, is it a growing problem? Is it constantly getting bigger? So you could have a popular problem, but if it's a shrinking problem, it's not so useful to be solving because it's probably already solved. It was a big problem. But if it's a shrinking market, it's going to be harder to get into it. Whereas if it's constantly growing, there's going to be a lot more space to innovate and grow with the problem as it is. Then another one is it an urgent problem? So do people have this problem right now that they want to solve? Then is it an expensive problem? Is it hard for people to solve normally and they actually have like a big budget for these things? Because that's like probably the most important ways and the easiest way to start is if you can actually raise money and charge people for the thing or can clearly demonstrate that you're going to have a commercial viable product afterwards. Then the fifth one is it mandatory? Like, do you have to fix this problem? So like legal things such as if your car fails its MOT, it has to get fixed, or if there's a change in like the way legal things happen. So such as like Grays that used to post people snacks, that was a change in the legal status of what a letter is. So suddenly they could send a small box with some food in it, and it was actually like this huge opportunity that had never existed before. You could start sending things like there's opportunities that you can actually explore as well. But then finally, is it a frequent problem? So do people have this problem regularly? And you kind of need that, because if it's a frequent problem, that's how you can change behaviors. And to change a behavior, you kind of need the motivation to do the thing, you need the ability, and you need the trigger. So if you have a frequent problem, then you're going to have the trigger regularly, at which point they might have the ability to do it and the motivation. Whereas if they have the problem sometimes, it might not be at a time when they actually have the ability to do something about it. So if it's a frequent problem, they're much more likely to have the opportunity to actually do something. And that's the main areas of problems that you want to look at for your startup and think about, okay, where might I fit into these things? You don't need to hit all six of them, but you need to have two of them pretty strong or maybe a bit of average across all of them. So Jack, the next section was on how you would show that you have an unfair advantage. So if you've identified this area of all these problems and you fit some of them, you then need to think about, okay, how am I going to solve this problem and how do I prove that I'm the person to do this and that my idea will fit it? So you could talk about some of the unfair advantages.
Yeah, on the podcast, our presentation, it listed five major factors. The first one being founders, the market, the product, acquisition, and monopoly. I'm guessing those ones you're talking about, right?
Exactly.
Good start. Yeah, so a good example is the advantage coming from founders. If you have a PhD in biomedical science and you're looking at creating a biomedical product, the assumption is that you have an unfair advantage when it comes to creating said product because you are a very native. But secondly, the market, is the market yourself going for? Is that something that is going to be growing hugely in the next few years, year on year on year growth? Is it upwards of like 5-10%? Are we talking 50% year on year growth? Thirdly, the product. Is the product going to be 10x better than what is currently in the market? I mean, can you create that product which is going to be 10x better? Then acquisition, is the idea good enough where people are going to buy you essentially for free? Would not even buy you, they're going to download you or use you for free and tell your friends about it, which leads to the last one, which is monopoly. Are you going to be able to control and be the leading person slash product in the marketplace quickly enough? In other words, can you create a strong enough network effect whereby you become massive quickly, aka blitz grow? Yeah, back to you, Sammy.
The final things with these unfair advantages is this is what you need to present to investors and also to yourself, that you can solve these things that he then talks about to sort of prove that you can like overcome the hurdles to become like a success. So when someone's reading your application, they want to see that you can pass a threshold level that you are just able to do it. So as they're reading your application, or if an investor's like looking at it, they're looking at the founders and your product and things, they're going to be assessing like, is this person really able to do this? Are they going to be able to do the things they're saying? And they don't necessarily look for like complete excellence, but they just have like a boundary level of like, is it even possible, or is it just like not going to happen? And as long as you pass like the possible maybe, then you've got through the threshold for them to like consider you fully and you go in the bin. The second one is, does it have like a miracle unicorn potential in it? And if it seems it could be a reliable business, but it isn't going to go huge, that's not that interesting for investors. They want to see something that could be a $1 billion idea, and they expect a lot will fail. But if they put 100 million into 100 companies and one becomes a unicorn, that's like a huge payoff for them. So they want to only be investing in things that have a huge vision that could become this massive thing. So you need to show that there's the potential for it. And so then in the lecture that he gave, he then goes into some examples of companies and what they said and how they prove these different things. So this is the point where we now go into Syncify and think about, okay, well, how does this apply to us? What are the things that we can be doing, or what are the things that we need to sort of improve on, etc. Essentially, Syncify is an app that lets you listen to things in sync with other people. And I first had the idea for music when I was doing my uni degree like 9 years ago. And it was just like a small problem for me. And it was like, it would be really nice to listen to music at the same time as people and have like silent discos and be able to sort of listen to things whilst I was busy working, but my mates were all going and doing other stuff. I just felt a bit left out. And so I felt a bit lonely, and I thought it'd be really nice and you could do cool stuff. But it wasn't a huge problem. And it's only in the last few years where it's just become like an increasingly big problem in my mind in terms of trying to listen to things with other people on podcasts. And it's just so hard trying to get people to be at the same point as you are on things and to actually discuss stuff. And like, I might listen to a lecture like this and think, oh, I've got all these great ideas and things, but I can't talk about it at a granular level with anyone else because they're just not at that same headspace as I am. So that was just the one problem that I've already got. The whole loneliness thing has been growing, partly for myself and partly the world. Like, social media just doesn't help at all. It kind of makes you feel more lonely. It's isolating. It doesn't connect you. Humans want like a real connection, so to understand each other better. And then suddenly COVID thing comes and people get more isolated. And then the Black Lives Matter, as people kind of realize that people aren't communicating in ways that are useful to actually understand what's going on. All of these things sort of just point to the fact that there's a lot of problems right now that need solving. And like the huge growth in podcasts shows that like there's a hugely growing problem as well. So we're kind of hitting the top three problems already. If like it's popular, it's growing, it feels urgent, it's not so expensive to solve as such, but there are some companies paying for things like this. And certainly if you're going to be paying for counseling or something, and if we could actually protect your mental health earlier by just giving you more real connections, like that's hugely useful. And all like Johan Hari talks so much about that medication for like depression is that it's more like having connections with real people and feeling involved with people's lives and them understanding you. It's like, it's all about these things. So there are actually some real fundamental big expenses that we are solving on one of the edge cases.
I worked on a project with the NHS, a company I used to work for, would basically incentivize people to walk more by giving them a virtual currency. And what we found was, if you actually look at the cost of someone who has diabetes, for example, on the NHS, and if they exercise more in a pre-diabetes stage, so they're prone to pre-diabetes, it would reduce the risk of them getting diabetes by 50, 60%, let's say. If that person is going to then cost the NHS up to £4,000 or £5,000 a year individually, it's worth their time investing in a technology that will stop them having to take insulin. And so if you can provide a product that is costs £1,000 per person per year, and there are 6 million people in the UK who have diabetes, suddenly you have a £1 million product that you can sell, and it's still at a pretty decent cost and a massive saving to the NHS. In the same way with Syncify, one of the things I realized is millions of people suffer from being lonely, but also millions of people suffer from these esoteric lonely ideas. And not only that, ignorance is spreading, which means people are continuing to remain lonely and have lonely thoughts. And they discuss these lonely thoughts with other people, and it compounds their original idea. And when you have lonely, isolated, ignorant thoughts, that actually becomes systematized, and this leads into society. And then society basically starts to be mean to one another. And when things and meet people are mean to one another, either isolated or other thing, they get lonely. Loneliness leads to depression. And when you're depressed, you can do a few things, but one of the things you go do is you try and sort it chemically. And I'm not saying that Syncify is going to reduce the symptoms of depression or anything like that. Obviously, we're not a cognitive behavioral therapy tool. But if we can in some way impact and reduce the amount of people who suffer from loneliness, which as a consequence is depression, and alleviate the stress that comes from this as an expense on the government or NHS, I'm just literally thought spewing here, that is a potentially huge selling point for us.
Yeah, certainly for the NHS, but also for like universities where this is like a real problem in terms of their students and companies, like their staff, if they're taking sick days or they're just not performing at their best because they don't feel so positive, like that's a huge thing. And also on the company side of things, even if you're not talking about the depression side, just being in sync with each other and actually being able to be aligned on what it is that you're doing. In terms of, for us, it's massively valuable to actually understand. If you read a great book and you're like, this is so amazing, and I just have no clue what you're talking about, it just helps align you about these things. In the same way, like we now have had this conversation, we kind of both have the better vision of like what we want to talk about in terms of what the health benefits are for someone. And we haven't really had this full conversation before, and now we are.
And you know, it was an educational tool. I had to think about it. The best way for me to understand things is to apply it to myself. Like, I wasn't a good university student. I did English and drama, and I found the creative things I did at university far more entertaining. Sometimes I would go to a lecture, and I wouldn't pay any attention to the lecture. And then I go to a seminar, I pay 50% more attention to the seminar. But after that, it's up to me, right? What I see in the educational thing, if you would just take a step away from mental health for a second, is like lecture, there's no incentive for me to listen if I'm not connected to my degree or education. Second level down, seminar, there's now like 10 of us, people are engaging. But at the same time, if you're not really feeling it, there's a bit of pressure and you might say the wrong thing and you're a bit like, okay, I'm a bit nervous. Syncify is that extra level. It's that third level down whereby it goes lecture, seminar, Syncify. Syncify is the time where like over a period of playlists or to do with your subject or whatever the prescribed reading is, an audiobook or that is, there's notes there by the people in the seminar room. And finally, someone like me, who finds it hard to pay attention a lot of the time when I was at university, has that extra resource, and it really would benefit my learning.
It's all that extra reading that you kind of could have a bit more time for, and it would make it more engaging and you get more out of it. And that's the stuff that I didn't do that much at uni. I went to the lectures, I did the initial homework, and then crammed just as exams were coming. And it was the people that actually spent more time with these things and tried to like make more notes, which was kind of more difficult for me. But if I'd sort of been a bit more active and had like other people doing it, I probably would have got involved with it more.
Did you speak up in seminars? Were you like quite a...
I asked the odd question at seminars, but also my head was a bit all over the place. So I was running different businesses and I was like running out of seminars to like take calls, people having bread deliveries and this kind of stuff. I wasn't the ideal student.
Tech is entering education every single day. And it's weird because tech is seemingly trying to address the massive holes that are so apparent in education, just in the way that we're taught and what we're taught. At one point, do you think that the whole education system is going to be made to look so ridiculous through the current problems that we're seeing in society?
Yeah, I think as innovation gets faster and faster, it's just becoming very irrelevant. As in, there's a nice quote of the education system was built 2 centuries ago. It's being taught by people from 1 century ago for people trying to exist in this century. And it's really absurd when you think of that. We're still using these systems and like people are learning things. So firstly, it's like rote learning. So you're not learning to understand how to learn, and you don't want to understand the thing that you're doing. You're doing it just so you can answer a question on an exam. That doesn't really make you wise or useful, and it's not teaching you necessarily the transferable skills that you need in the world. So what they should be teaching is things like a growth mindset and how to learn new skills quickly and how to be adaptable. If you're a 12-year-old now, the things they're teaching you by the time in like 10 years when you finish university, there's going to be so many jobs that don't even exist and like things that no one's even thought of.
When I remember you at school, if someone had told me that you were going to become like an entrepreneur, businessman who has all these like crazy ideas, you actually want an instrument, I'd be like, okay, for a start, no, that's definitely not Sam, because you weren't ever given the opportunity. And there was no incentive for you to go and explore those ideas or put value into them. Anyway, let's move on to the unfair advantage.
On to unfair advantages. So founders wise, when I first had the idea, I was not suitable for building it really, in terms of I couldn't code, I didn't have any skills in the music or podcast industry at all. I hadn't really built businesses before. I was currently making a big mess of my degree and the business I was running at the time. And so it's not useful. Whereas now I have run a few businesses, I've worked with loads of coders, I am a coder, so I kind of know how to build the product. I run a few podcasts, I'm much more deeper into that industry as it is. Not like a PhD level in terms of loneliness and these sort of things, but I did study psychology, and so I am pretty into that area as well, and science. So hit quite a few of those things. And then Jack, you have got like a lot of skills on growth. You've worked in few really fast growing startups.
I'm almost personality wise suited to being a founder in the way that like I will literally drag things if I need to through the mud or whatever to make sure that they kind of get done, in terms of just my personality. But in terms of skill set, this is my first experience ever as being right at the very provenance of an idea.
You've worked in scale ups more.
Yeah, scale ups as opposed to startups for sure.
Which is good, because I've mainly worked in startups and not scale ups. Certainly a bit yin and yangy to me in that sense, as in we're always quite different, but like overall get the same thing, but we kind of approach doing things in very different ways, which is quite useful.
Yeah, we know each other, and like we know how much we can piss each other off. So I think that's actually an unfair advantage. You rarely get founders who have known each other and been through as much as you and I have together. And I honestly think that founders who know each other through business and they've never started or spent as much time on the phone as they probably are doing now, they're like going, oh no, oh, I'm actually going to have to argue with this person I've only ever had a business relationship with before. And that's a huge unfair advantage that we have.
If either one of us was being a dick, the other one could call the person's mother, kind of be like, you'd definitely call your mum, be like, please tell Jack to stop being an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Market?
Well, podcast is growing huge. Product? We do feel that it is 10 times better than what's currently out there. It does seem like other people are starting to innovate in this space as well. So there might be a bit of a race to solve this problem, but I think it's going to happen because it needs to. And it's just so annoying. So we do feel like it is 10 times better. User acquisition, I feel that because it is so much better, that people would be acquirable for free. We've got a lot of cool things we can talk about. Like I think we can get good partnerships with companies just want to share us with people. So a few companies have already had that are going to share us with all their customers and their employees and things. And I think we can get some good content in terms of PR and this sort of stuff. We start proving useful things, that we're working with mental health organizations. And so I think we can acquire people for free, and then hopefully it wouldn't be expensive to start paying once we've proven product market fit and like to really ramp up the scale of these things as well.
And I think with an idea as large as ours, the idea of not using paid acquisition as early as possible is something that I know exactly what that looks like when the conversation is happening with a company who has a poor product in terms of retention. And when a company is sticky and it has over like a 60 to 70% day 30 retention, that is when you throw the fuel on the fire. That is like, we need to grow that. As soon as you start growing and paying that user base, for a start, someone's already started having that idea and doing the same thing. And secondly, you need to revenue generate. And when you revenue generate, what happens is you start to get lifetime value of a customer. And people right at the beginning, they don't ever think when they're growing users, oh, I wonder how much that person's worth. If people start listening to Syncify, we don't immediately go, I wonder how much that person's worth to us as a business. So what we need to do is very quickly in terms of the acquisition is look, how much is this person worth to us? Because if that person is worth £3 to us, we can afford to spend £2.20 on them. And if we can get 10,000 downloads a day at a cost of £2.20 per person, there's no point in not doing it, just as like a thing. So you've got to definitely dissect what paid user acquisition is for a blitz like Uber, who lost money when they were doing it, and a company who is competently growing through paid, who both retain and are getting more value and more profit per user. So it's really important to address what user acquisition means to you at different areas of the company.
Definitely. So we really need to like be quite analytically based in terms of working out when is the point that we pull that trigger of like, okay, what is sort of the 30-day retention and what is like the virality factor of people sharing it, and like just the satisfaction score of people using it to then be like, okay, we've got product market fit, go nuts. Hey, assuming that we get there, but then if we're looking at those metrics, we're always going to be kind of building features that will push us in that direction. But also we do want to be not just focused on just clicks alone, and you can kind of, if you're not talking properly to users, you can sort of make the wrong decisions if you're just going from a completely analytic standpoint. And so I do want to think about people's health and like what's the actual long-term thing. If people are like are getting so addicted to this, that might even be a bad thing, because of we don't want people to be like stuck to their phone and then like after a week be like, actually I kind of spent so much time on this, I think I need to delete the app because it's ruining my life or something. So we need to actually think about how we're doing this properly, because I think that's the current problem with the social media apps that exist.
We would encourage you to set your screen time at max an hour a day on this app. That would just be such a positive thing to it, isn't it? And the last one, I guess it's down to product again, monopoly / network effect / product market fit.
Yeah, so it's certainly something that will get much stronger if as more people get on it, as soon as you've got like your friends on it, that's where the value is. And hopefully that will add to the virality as well, in terms of if it's working well with me and you, I'd be inclined to share it with some other people because I want my other friends on there who I like and don't have time to talk to you that much. And hopefully we can nail that and it's going to become a big monopoly and life will be great and investors will see our huge vision and life is perfect. So then finally, just like the hurdles to overcome, can we prove that we can definitely make this? So we're sorting the beta, hopefully that will be out very soon and people like us enough to think that we can do this. And then can people sort of see that there is a potential for this to be like a bit of a unicorn? Potentially, we definitely feel like it is one of those businesses that isn't just going to be like a small thing. If it takes off and solves the problem that we're trying to solve, it will, we think, be huge. And that's kind of why we feel it needs to be done. And hopefully we have investors that kind of think the same things.
Brilliant.
And that was us. And that's why we feel that we validated doing this idea. Hopefully hearing us talk about the different ways, things to look for in an idea has helped spark you on your own ideas. So if you have any that you've been thinking about, maybe this made you think about them more and maybe you feel like sharing them with someone else and like talking about it to see if it's not just in your own brain and if you're going mad or if it's something worth pursuing, because of we'd love for you to actually learn from this series and actually maybe start your own ideas.
Great.
So thank you so much for listening. Yeah,
thanks guys.
Good.
Bye.
Ciao.